Have you ever had a feeling that something dreadful was about to happen?
This whole premise is sweaty.
Okay, moving right along.
You gonna plagiarize the whole thing for us? Do you have any thoughts of your own on this matter?
Just remember that this thing isn't as black as it appears.
Hold on to your butt.
The only difference between me and a homeless man is his job.
I'm glad you're here to tell us.
I'm looking for the least possible amount of responsibility.
And that ain't bad.
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
Man's got to know his limitations.
I'm glad you came back.
In the bag.
Network.
I drink it up.
Welcome to Bagpod, everyone. We've got Joe Doug and Jimmy TV live from Charlottesville, Virginia.
We're in the Charlottesville studios.
Yeah, what up?
Yeah, it's quite nice over there. There's lots of leather-bound books.
The smell of fresh mahogany.
Exactly. And I think Joe might be eating a whole wheel of cheese. We also have Alan, but I believe he is currently relieving himself.
He's taking the piss,
so
literally.
We'll join when he gets back. Let's kick this off with Game of Thrones. Where do we want to start here?
Joffrey, we've missed you.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Joffrey comes back with a vengeance.
I'm back.
Excellent.
Put me in the
Joffrey,
Guinness.
We were just talking about your boy, Jeffrey.
Fucking Joffrey.
Yeah, that guy is... I mean, he was always nuts in the books, but in the show... He is like Hitler nuts.
He is Hitler.
I mean, it's crazy. Like, he's the next Mad King, I feel like. Or he just might usurp the name from the old Mad King. I'm not quite sure. But, what disturbed you guys more? Was it the, pointing the crossbow at Sansa and stripping her in front of everyone, or was it the,
Oh, no. It was definitely the other one.
Yeah, it was definitely the other one.
Yeah. I was actually a little relieved when Roz used the scepter as a spanking instrument. I thought it was going to be used a different way.
Yeah, I think we all might have thought that it was going to...
We were watching it in the mixed company. I was like, oh, man, this is going to get real nasty.
The fact that we were even considering that as a possibility, though, is... Yeah. It just speaks so much to Joffrey's character.
Exactly.
I think it was intentional. Because, yeah, I was relieved when he just hit her with it.
Yeah.
He broke it against her ass. We were all like, oh, thank God.
Oh, thank God.
It's broken. God, thank God.
Yes. So, Alan, how do you want Joffrey to die this week?
I would first like to see him tenderized by, like, maybe like a Floyd Mayweather. Just get hung up. And practiced on by a professional boxer.
Uh-huh.
Then, since in this episode he got to go into that room because he had a little surprise, like, hey, we've got a gift for you in the next room. I'd like for that to be the setup. And then the gift is the Ark of the Covenant. It's already open. And his face melts.
His face.
Fair enough. I mean, that sounds like a pretty good way for him to go out. But yeah, no. So he returned with a vengeance. And what do you think of the new throne room there after he did his little modifications?
Oh. I guess I didn't really even realize it.
Yeah, I didn't take notes.
Yeah, it looked. I think there was a lot more black going on in there. But it seemed about the same.
We're actually getting a bit ahead of ourselves. I really enjoyed seeing the new locations on the opening title sequence.
Yes, that got me really excited.
We had two new ones, correct? We had
Harrenhal,
Carth.
Yeah.
The place that was not building, as opposed to all the other places we've seen in the theme song, where they're like you see them building up. That place was just in ruins.
Yeah, Harrenhal is a piece of shit.
It got melted by a dragon.
Yes, it did. And Harrenhal actually looked like shit.
I didn't think it looked that bad, Dags.
I thought it looked pretty crappy. Like,
well,
I thought it didn't look real.
Really saw shots of it.
I don't know. They showed the first,
when they first got there kind of thing. They were walking up to it.
Establishing shot, and it was just like, I don't know, it looked faker than all the other ones for some reason to me. I don't know why.
I thought it looked nice.
Maybe the rats have taken over that place.
The rat and the tickler, yeah, definitely.
What is that from? That's been in something else.
That is exactly what I was thinking when I saw that. I was like, I have seen this or heard about this. Was this like an urban legend when we were kids or something?
Well, the closest thing that I could come up with was 1984, George Orwell's book, where the main protagonist, his head is put in a cage of rats because that's what he's afraid of the most.
No, there's a mouse or a rodent eating its way out of a person.
Yeah, because a fire has been lit or something. Yeah, it seemed very familiar to me.
That was the only thing I could come up with. So.
I'm going to look up rat torture on Wikipedia.
All right, excellent.
Yeah.
While you do that, how do we feel about the cop-out, the battle cop-out at the very beginning?
This was
the go to black.
Yeah,
that was bad.
We've been missing a lot of battles, according to you guys, correct?
Not really. I mean, like, there's a lot of battles that go on, but they're off. They're not like described in the book.
Yeah, they're not on screen in the book either. So like,
we don't see Rob Stark at all, except when he's with Caitlin. So it's like even having him there. It would not be in the book, you know?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I realize that they have a limited budget and whatnot, but that was really corny.
That was a tease.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. They didn't even do the whole thing where, like, a bunch of people ride by the camera, and then somehow the camera gets lost in, like, a cape, and then it's the next day. Like, just, like, five people ran off, and that was it. And then, of course, Rob wins the battle, and he gives the doomy eyes to quite a fine little nursey poo.
Yeah. I felt like there, in that whole sequence, that there was a lot of modern warfare messages going on there. Like, a lot of parallels to the war in Afghanistan. The whole discussion of are we going to be as bad as our enemies? Like, you can't take the high road in, you know, such a dirty war. Mm-hmm. And then her whole discussion with him about, oh, so you're going to overthrow the king, but you don't have a plan for what's going to happen after you've ousted this leader. It all seemed very, like, apropos, very intentional.
I like it.
Yeah, definitely. Especially the last part there where, you know, that kind of happened the first time we took over Afghanistan as well.
Yeah.
I could definitely see that. It was interesting to actually see that, you know. In the book, I don't think that's ever really mentioned. I don't think Rob's desires are really wavering. He always wants to be the King of the North. I don't remember him being
the King of the North.
King of the North.
But yeah, I don't think he ever like even considers being like the king of all of the lands, you know. So it was interesting. Maybe it'll be interesting to see if maybe this pops back up throughout the series or throughout this season at least. Now I guess a mini spoiler alert here. Do we think the nurse is
going to come back?
Is just a nurse, or do we think she comes back as?
It looked like she really caught Rob's eye.
Yeah.
Is a nurse just a nurse?
Never.
Are you a fan of riddles? With that other great scene in this episode between the eunuch and the kid.
I think that was last episode, but yes.
No, I think she did say something like that, didn't she?
About riddles?
I think she had a really corny, cheesy line like that.
It's full of corny, cheesy lines. Anyway, let me get back to the question at hand. Do you think she's going to be a step in, like a replacement for...
Is this Jean Westerling?
Yes, that's what I'm looking for.
Yes.
That's what we were kind of thinking.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Like, they spent a little too much time talking to her and showing Rob just undressing her with his eyes that I think she'll end up being...
She looks like Rob's caught, she caught Rob's eye, and she is clearly not a Frey, which it bodes poorly for his betrothal to one of the Freys.
Yes, and she also mentioned that she was from a lesser house.
No, she said she was from Valandis, didn't she?
Yeah, what did she say she was from?
I think she said Valandis, which is one of the nine Free Cities.
I thought she said Atlantis. I was like, what is she living in the water?
That's what I heard as well. I was like, Atlantis is in Westeros. What is going on? No, now we'd know where it went.
Yeah.
I didn't. Yeah, I get. Maybe I don't know. That's
the only thing kind of making me stop not think that she's going to be Jean is that she's from Volandis and not from Westeros.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I haven't gotten. I haven't finished the fourth book yet. I know I'm really milking that shit. The fifth book. So I don't know if maybe the Westlings end up having more to do or not, like in the story, but. Yeah, so I don't know. We'll keep an eye out on that. I'm thinking, at the very least, it's going to be a hint of Rob's future infidelity.
All right.
Next, we got Tyrion on top of his game again.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah, with Lancel.
Yeah, Lancel and with Sansa. I thought he was really good with Sansa, too.
Yeah,
I really liked that line where he said, Sansa Stark, you might outlive us all or whatever. Whatever he says.
Yes.
Which is, I thought that was really quite a good line. And Sansa was definitely doing it up too, making sure that she was.
Yeah, especially right before he said that line, I was even thinking, no, tell him the truth. You know, tell him how you really feel. But she gets what's going on. Yeah, she knows the game, and she knew that it was smarter to keep going along with it. Even though she would have been safe with him, it was smart of her to play it that way.
Well, I mean, she also wouldn't know. I mean, they were in a fairly public place as well, so.
True.
Being like, oh no, save me in front of the king, probably would have ended up with a crossbow in the knee.
Best case scenario.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, so I really like Tyrion. He didn't have that much to do. I like that scene. And then, of course, yeah, he definitely pwned Lancel.
What did we think of? We finally get Renly. Or some good stuff with Renly, that is.
Yeah, we actually get something going on with Renly as well. He and Stannis really hate each other.
Yeah.
I thought their hostilities were really hostile. I don't know. Maybe, I mean, in the book they don't really mention this at all either, but it might have been nicer just to see maybe a tiny bit more warmth. I mean, they are brothers. We all know Jimmy TV and Joe Dog are very close, so.
That's right.
But it might have been nice to get a little
bit. We'll lead us to kings. We'll lead us to kings.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, they were really, really hostile towards each other. And Stannis, I mean, Stannis just came in there and was like, yo, this is how it's going down. And if you don't like it, it's you know, you're up shit creek.
Yeah.
So. And Renly was calling him out for getting with Melisandre. He seemed to know what was going on.
Exactly. Which, again, I'm pretty sure does not happen in the book.
So you know what else doesn't happen in the book is Littlefinger's voice constantly changing.
No, I still have not noticed that. You guys have brought it up. Still, I don't hear it.
Alan, that's a problem.
It is. Maybe I just need to listen harder for it. Well, this is not.
Here, this is what you need to do. You need to go back and watch the first episode again. Was it the first episode? Was he in the first episode? I can't remember. But wherever his first appearance was, his voice sounded horrific and horrendous. And it sounds nothing like what his voice sounds like right now. So just go back, just rewatch that first episode. Go get it.
It sounds just like a little bit more Baltimore.
No, a little bit more Batman.
It sounded like the Batman growl.
Yeah, so his voice is all over the place. He's growling, and he's
like, I look like a pimp.
Exactly. In today's episode, this week's episode, it sounded like he was doing like a really light growl in this first scene. And then his second scene, it sounded like he was trying to do like a Sean Connery accent or something.
Yeah, he was definitely throwing some Irish thing in there.
Well, he is Irish.
Yeah. Wait, yes. Sean Connery
he finally just said, fuck it, I'm just going to use my normal voice.
I mean, he couldn't be any worse than what he's got going on now.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Baelish was getting crushed all over the episode between Renly and
he didn't have a good day.
Marjorie and then Caitlin as well. I mean, I don't know what the hell he was thinking, talking about Caitlin, like,
that was
trying
a mistake. That was such a mistake. Hey, here are your husband's bones. I'm horny.
Speaking of bones.
Yeah, let's get it down.
I'm the bone daddy.
This is a terrible plan.
Yeah, Exactly. But yes, going off of Jimmy TV's segue, speaking of bones, I was glad to get the knuckle bones in there finally after after so many episodes. I guess we're almost halfway through the season. And it was nice that they finally described what was going on with Davos and his knuckle bones, and they gave us that little backstory as well.
Mm-hmm.
Although Stannis definitely seems a little more smarmier in the show than he does in the book. In the book, he seems more just like, you know, I'm the king and you have to listen to me, whereas here he's definitely like...
He does seem to be enjoying his power a little bit more in the series.
Yeah, he seems to be much more of a dick.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know what you guys think about all that.
It's fine.
Yeah. Ooh. Dude just got hit.
Okay. And then of course, before we've got a couple more things before we get to the end. Let's go to I guess Arya. I mean, Arya didn't have a lot to do. You know, she was at Harrenhal.
Right.
And Gendry.
It was nice to have Tywin come back.
Yes, Tywin ran running in and saving her. In fact,
he was awesome.
Mm-hmm. And he just came right up and was like, "Yo, this is a bitch."
He's like, "You guys are all idiots.
You guys are blowing it. This person does not have a penis."
And this person you're about to torture could make his armor.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Tywin definitely laying down the law.
And then what did he say at the end? Like, "Hey, bring the girl. I need a cup wench."
Yeah,
that's what he said.
Basically, that's just like his page. Like, it's not sexual or anything like that.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Yeah. So she will be serving him copious amounts of wine. So yeah, Tywin saving Arya unbeknownst to him. And then we've also got Dany finally getting her way out of the desert. Oh,
what about that one guy, Grit, in the mountain?
Well, no. Yeah, well, yeah. When Hot Pie said that he was going to stare at the mountain, that was great.
Yeah, no, that clearly did not work.
But yeah, Dany.
Hot Pie.
Well, speaking of Arya, I liked that she was doing what that guy that she had the conversation with right before they were attacked last episode, that she started doing the thing that he did when in his story of she just started whispering the names of her enemies at night.
Yeah.
That's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was
Arya's getting hard.
Yeah, it was like we discussed last week, it was cool to have that origin story in last episode. So we kind of know where that came from.
Yeah.
That's good.
So I liked that. But yeah, are we done with Harrenhal for now, for the time being?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go over across the Narrow Sea, over to Dany and Karth.
How did she say it that one time that the dude corrected her?
She said Quarth. She said it the way that I would have said it before I realized how it was actually pronounced.
Yeah, she put a U up in that piece.
Gotcha.
I thought...
The Spice King was hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was good times. He was definitely not trying to let him in, for sure.
He was real jolly.
Mm-hmm. And I thought Dany did a pretty good job, too. They've done a pretty good job of, like, showing that she doesn't really know what she's doing, but, like, she's gaining experience sort of stuff. Because, like, she clearly didn't know how to, like, she figured that they would treat her like a queen, but she clearly was mistaken, so I thought...
She wasn't, she got chumpetized.
Yeah, so I thought it was good that she kind of, like, had to slow her roll a little bit and then realize what was going on and then tried to, you know, use a different tactic. But when they asked about the dragons, how do they not know... Just to take the horse that she stared right at.
You know, had three boxes on it.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the visual equivalent of a stage whisper. Like, it was just us that were supposed to see that she stared at that. You know, they didn't realize what she was looking at.
Well, they're idiots.
Yeah.
Because they stared that shit down.
That prissy gang. Yeah, they are idiots. Yeah. Those guys are such, like, stuck-up, like... teenage girls about it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the greatest city in the world. We're not just going to let savages in.
Exactly. Nice. Excellent voice. We're going to need that voice.
That was kind of the honey badger voice. Or whatever. Carthians don't give a fuck.
I think you can just come in here.
What's wrong with you guys? But yeah, no. And then Zero Zoan Dax. I don't know his full name.
You nailed it.
Yep, thank you. He comes up and he cuts his palm and he's like, "Yo, I'm vouching for this girl." And that's how it happened.
So did you know that that was going to unfold from the books? Because when he first was like, "I'm invoking whatever," I thought he was going to fight that guy.
I'm invoking Marlock.
it's completely different in the book. In the book, the writer comes back with Zero and a couple other people, and then they just walk into the city.
Okay. When he was like, "I'm invoking whatever," and pulled that knife, I was like, okay.
Yeah, you're like, all right, it's about to go down.
Yeah.
I was like, that guy has no chance of
winning. Yeah, you're about to open up that fat man.
Summer Highlanders, you're about to bring it. But yeah, no, it definitely happens different in the book. They also left out a whole chapter or two from the book where Dany and her Khalasar, if you will, find like an abandoned city. And then she has like a little internal thing about like, maybe we could settle here sort of thing. And then she realizes that they can't.
But, we gotta get to Westeros.
Exactly. So that wasn't, that wasn't like a needed thing or anything. So
it's probably having established that the fat man, the Spice King, is not in the books, and this won't be a spoiler, when do we think he's gonna die? How long is it gonna take for him to get killed?
Next episode.
I would assume the Undying episode.
You think towards the end?
Yeah. The temple.
Whenever the savages get too hungry.
Right. Right. Whenever they need copious amounts of food.
Exactly.
They'll just cut the fat man open.
But yeah, no, and then they opened up the gates, and Karth looked really baller, actually.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of excited to see what they do with it when we finally get in there in the next couple of episodes, because it looked fucking nice as bowls.
Yeah.
Go for a nice swim.
But, I think it's time to go back to Westeros and talk about the fucking craziest shit that I might have ever seen in a television show.
Certainly up there.
Yeah. It is.
Good old Melisandre getting mad naked with Davos in a cave. And
then popping out that shadow baby.
Yeah, popping out. It looked like the fog monster from
Lost
Ferngully. Yeah.
Oh, even better. Mm-hmm. Good call.
That's what it looked exactly like that. And I was like, oh, damn, this is not going to end well. And that shit was gross.
I thought it was one of the ghosts from The Frighteners.
Nah, it's another good reference.
Yeah. So, I mean, that whole thing was just a little too much for me.
Yeah.
Guys, you've been waiting for that scene ever since you saw it in the trailers. You've been waiting for it ever since you read it in the book.
I know, but once I saw it, I immediately wished I could have unseen it.
You can't take back what you've seen. You can't undo what you've done.
There you go. Exactly. J-Dog could not have put it better.
I have no idea what that was.
It was, I was surprised they...
Wait. I'll tell you what that was.
Oh, boy.
There's this horrific, like, Christian TV series called McGee and Me. And in one of the episodes...
I remember.
And in one of the episodes, the main character is like some like little like you know like 14-year-old do-gooder, but he's been grounded, or no, maybe he's like supposed to be working on a report or something like that. But his buddy, he really wants to go see some horror movie, but his parents won't let him because it's rated R.
And no.
Yeah. And it could be scary. He's not old enough to see it, but he sneaks out of the house with the help of his friend and. And they go see the movie, and while, you know, they're showing him watching the movie, and it's in 3D, of course, so he's got these sweet glasses on, and so they're showing him watching the movie, and he's just making the most absurd faces.
And squirming around in his seat, and, like, trying to, like, look away and nod at the same time. It's man.
I swear there's, like, some rock ballad playing in the background going, "You can't unsee what you see."
He forgot the crucial lesson that what is dead can never die. He let himself get soft inside.
Did he real soft?
That was I'm wondering if maybe they didn't really bitch out on the Dany birthing scene. I mean, they kind of did. They never really showed the baby, so I'm thinking maybe that was kind of a response to that. So they wanted to make sure that that was just, we got all the gory details from the shadow birthing scene. But yeah, that shit was intense.
It really was.
And her, her stomach started like going up and down. And,
yeah. Yeah, they really blew it out of the box, the effects budget on that.
Yeah,
she blew it out of her box.
I think that's it. Yeah. I think we got to end the podcast on that. That's just too good.
That's someone
too good. But yeah, no. And Davos' reaction, too, was like, oh, my God. I can't
She told me I was going to get to see what was under the robe.
Hit Davos' reaction to Mel's blowing out the box was the reaction of McGee and me, guy trying to watch this movie. That's pretty much the exact same.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was just all sorts of crazy. That was too much. What do we think? When do we think we're gonna see this shadow do its deed? Alan, do you know do you have any theories about what the shadow's about to do?
I was always told that no one but the shadow knows what evil lurks in the heart of men. Oh. So I will just have to wait and see, because I had no idea what that thing was.
What's going down.
That was the last thing I was expecting to see. I thought it was just going to be like a little monster baby. That looked like a full-grown man that walked out of her.
Yes, a full-grown man shadow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm hoping that ends up happening at the very beginning of the next episode. Otherwise, I think we'll end up... It'll kind of end up being a detriment, but we'll see what happens.
For all those listeners, I guess... Well, the movie maybe thinks on YouTube, but...
Yeah,
we'll do a link to on the post, yeah. I just found it, too. It's in three parts. Well, yeah, well I'm going to enjoy this later, my friend. Cut that part out of the podcast, by the way.
Okay.
I don't want people knowing that I'm going to enjoy it later.
No, that's staying in, and you're going to enjoy it. You're going to really enjoy it.
And cut out my reference to the shadow.
Nope, that's staying in as
nope,
well.
Nope, that stays.
This is all staying. But before we leave Westeros and Jimmy TV behind, do we have anything else that we need to discuss about Game of Thrones here?
This was kind of just a build-up episode. I mean, obviously there was some excellent parts to it, but I'm looking forward to watching the next one.
Yeah, I think the next one shit's about to really pop off. So we'll see how. Well, I mean, was this episode 4 or 5?
4.
So we got 6 more. So they're really churning through the book for the most part.
They're doing good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am loving every second of it.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's a good hour.
All right, Jimmy TV, you got anything to say before you vamoose and watch some more Blackhawks?
No, but you might overhear me a little bit. Just
can't wait.
And Jimmy TV can actually chime in because he watched the episode as well.
I did indeed.
Yeah. He did?
Oh, nice. All right. Let's go on to the Mad Men episode. First.
Mad Men.
Yeah, I don't think that's the theme song.
I didn't know if there was some. Yeah, it is.
It's the 80s remix.
You're wrong.
Yeah, so let's first, before we get into this week's episode, there's apparently been a lot of talk from so-called pundits and critics, if you will, that last week's episode was one of the Pantheon episodes for the show. And since we didn't have...
Oh, really?
Yes. Since we didn't have the normal Joe Dog and Alan P. on last week, I was wondering if maybe they had a little something to say before we moved into this week's episode.
Well, I made my thoughts known, or very briefly, comments on the website. But obviously, the fact that I hate Pete Campbell so much, I mean, yeah, it was clearly one of my favorite episodes. Mm-hmm. As far as it being one of the best episodes of Mad Men, I'm not sure. I've only watched everything just once, so I'm not sure if I'm highly qualified to say that, whether or not it's one of the best or not. But
I thought it was a great episode. John Slattery, who plays Roger, has been directing a few episodes lately, and he directed last week's, and I thought he did a really good job. There was a lot of great this whole issue of, like, you have Don Draper at the center of this show, and he, the guy that we knew, isn't really on the show anymore. He's kind of gone. The times are kind of washing him away, and there are a lot of people scrambling to fill that void in various ways. I think professionally and personally, like, as we saw in this week's episode, Peggy definitely on a personal level, but last week, Pete was definitely almost like begging Don to help him. Yeah. Like, help me be Don. And Don, and I think Don made a good point to Pete, which I think the writers were making to us, that, yeah, Don was really cool, but he's not a good guy. And he wasn't a happy guy, and he's not something that you should be chasing. I think he made that point very clear to Pete, that you don't want to be where I was. It might have looked cool from where you were, but I was miserable.
Yeah.
And man, that, I mean, it was a very poignant episode, but it was also a very hilarious episode, yeah, too, I thought. It was just all around a great, great hour.
Do you think the old Don is dead and gone for good, or do you think he might end up rearing his ugly head?
I personally believe that he is dead.
Okay.
But I don't know what the writers are going for or what's going to happen. I don't see Don going back to the man that he was.
Fair enough. I thought last week's episode was quite good as well. So,
and last week was, I think, the third time that Pete has been called out in the office for a fight.
And this time he actually got fought.
Yeah. There was a time earlier this season, and then there was another time last season also with Roger.
Yeah,
and,
both times with Roger. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this time he just did it.
Pete got crushed.
Yeah, he did.
Mm. I wanted to say one thing before we got to this week's episode. I'm kind of hoping that Ken and Don kind of have like a face. I mean, if old Don, at least old creative Don, comes back, I'm kind of hoping that Ken and Don have kind of a face-off where it's like, because Ken is like actually creative. Like, he's writing these stories and like people like them, and he's getting like a book, and you know, he got his story in the Atlantic Monthly in the first year, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Don is just kind of, I mean, he's creative, but he's like, he's not at, like, it's not as artistic creativity, I guess. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, he's creative in commercials and stuff.
So why would they have a showdown?
But I mean, not like a total showdown. I'm saying, like, it would be nice if the writers kind of, like,
found a way to get them to butt heads.
Or maybe not even butt heads, just, like, found a way to be like, you know, Ken is clearly the more creative person, you know, that sort of thing. Like, maybe, well, Ken quits and becomes a writer or something, you know, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, who knows, but that would be interesting, especially because, yeah, for as creative as Ken is, that's not his job over there.
Right.
He's a head of accounts.
Exactly.
So, I don't know, what if, well, as we saw in this episode, Cooper is a little fed up with how Don has been checked out.
Cooper,
who knows?
Was great in this episode.
Yeah, he was. But who knows if he might maybe try to tap Ken's creative outlet.
I feel as though, like, Ken's creative outlet can't be used in this setting. Because, like, Ken's trying to go for something, like, more profound almost, you know?
I would just say he doesn't want to. Like, he doesn't want to mix the two worlds.
Yeah, I can see that as well. But
because,
yeah.
I mean, like Don is all business. Like, he gets in this most recent episode, he's going on this trip with his wife, fun times, but he's also, you know, doing it to figure out the best way to sell Howard Johnson's or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Peggy obviously totally has her private and life, or private and working life intertwined. So, like, he's like one of the only people that can keep him separated.
Yeah. So, but yeah, let's get into this week's episode. Let's just talk about the structure first. Do we like the whole sort of like inciting incident thing where then we spiral off on three different storylines of the three different characters? Or
yeah,
it was like a one-off. Yeah,
it was like a Pulp Fiction structured episode, mm-hmm. which they've never done before, and it caught me off guard completely.
Yeah, yeah, I mean. I had to pause in the middle of the episode and look to my roommate and was like, so this is what's going on with when Peggy's thing was going on. I think I paused when Roger's thing was going on. I was like, so these two things are going on simultaneously.
Because
it was just kind of shocking to see that.
Yeah, it was only when when they showed you the shot again of Don pulling Megan out of the meeting.
Right.
At first, I was like, damn, Don's going to take her on another trip?
Yeah, exactly. So, I like the... I don't know if maybe they could have made it a little clearer. Maybe if they had followed... I guess if they had followed Don first, then all the drama would have exited. So, I don't know. But, yeah.
This show isn't a fan of... they don't like beating you over the head with that kind of thing.
Yeah. In any case, Peggy's segment... I really like Peggy's segment. It's clear that, like Alan was saying earlier, where Pete was trying to become the social Don, Peggy is clearly trying to become creative Don.
Yeah, that was painful.
Yeah, and I mean, even, it's like, she's good.
For baked beans meeting?
Yeah, yeah. For baked beans. her idea, like, that idea was really good.
Yeah.
Like, her pitch was really good for it, even, like, when she, like, called the guy out. Like, that was something Don would have done.
Yeah, and Don has done that before.
Right.
But it was, you know, hers was a little angry, and it was coming from a girl. The guy pretty much accused her of being on her period.
Right.
That was his response.
Are you, Peggy, menstruating right now?
Yeah. He's like, you're lucky I have a daughter and I understand what's happening right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That was ridiculous. But, I mean, I guess the Hines account is kind of the big account they're going for, right? Because they don't have the business yet, correct?
Yeah, they need everything they can get right now.
Yeah, so it's just, I mean,
they didn't give it to Peggy so she can dick around with it. They actually want her to, like, get something done.
Yeah.
But Don's just been blowing it off because he's been slacker Don.
Yeah. Do we think that they end up with the Hines account, or do you think the Hines account moves, or what?
I think the Hines account is pretty much just there to get this arc going with Peggy, like, you know, with her trying to kind of figure out what this guy wants and for her to be struggling with her job while other people are doing well.
More of a, like, red herring than anything.
Yeah, right. And as we, you know, modern audience, we have the foresight to know that Hines is a big account.
Yeah.
It'll be great for them if they can keep it. So I think that's something that we're supposed to instinctively root for because we in the future know that Hines is big business and not just beans.
Right. And they say something about, like, the iconic Hines label, so I think it is understood that it,
I'm sure at this point it is already.
Not, like, a big sexy thing, like, because they're always saying, like, oh, we got to, we're going to get Jaguar, we're going to get a car company, even if it's a crappy car company.
Well, yeah, it was, like, last year as well when they had Honda and they got the motorcycle, but they were like, Honda also means cars, too, you know? So it's like, you get Hines beans, and then all of a sudden maybe you can get some ketchup in there and some of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But
when you catch up your gold.
There you go. But yeah, and then, you know, Ken, I think Ken clearly was on Peggy's side as well. But, you know, he diffuses the situation. And then Peggy goes to blow up some steam in one of the great moments of hookup history.
She is turning into Don in every way imaginable.
Yeah, that was bizarre in that movie theater. What movie were they watching, first of all? I can't even remember.
like some safari movie or something.
Yeah.
It looked like Jack Hanna and Animal Planet or something. But yeah, no, she's in the movie. She smokes some weed. And
she likes to stick her hands in other people's pants for power, just like Don.
Just like Don did, right? Yeah, because he finger banged someone.
Yeah, as a power move.
Yeah,
right.
She had that little smile on her face too towards the end of that. So that was,
she was enjoying it.
Yeah,
man.
It was kind of creepy. I'm not gonna lie. But yeah, the old penis in the popcorn without the popcorn. I mean, what can you do? You can't get any better than that.
It looked like the dude was enjoying it.
Oh yeah, the dude was really enjoying that. He couldn't have wanted anything better on a weekday afternoon.
It worked out perfectly for him.
That worked out exactly as he thought it would.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was Yeah. In any case,
I mean, the show's not going to go there, but you know that guy is going to be at that theater every day the rest of the week.
Yeah.
That'd be great if, like, Don and Roger skipped out and he was there smoking a joint, just looking around.
Just looking around.
But yeah.
He just kind of pops up every now and then, like, asking random strangers on the road, hey, have you seen this girl?
She gave me a great hand job. Then Peggy goes to pass out. Apparently it was some strong-ass weed. She passes out for, like, 8 hours.
Yeah.
And when she wakes up, she's greeted by...
Dawn.
Well, yes, she's greeted by a very flustered Don phone call. And she tries to explain what happened with Hines, and he clearly doesn't care at all.
No.
We'll get into that a little later. And then she goes to her office, and she's met by Ginsburg. Who is...
Ginsburg gets real.
Getting more and more weird by the minutes.
You know, I really, really liked that scene. I thought that was great. But another thing I was thinking when I was watching it, is Ginsburg that weird? Like, is he weird to us? Or is it just that he is... I almost felt during that scene that maybe it's the rest of the people in that office that are weird. Like, we think he's weird because he likes his privacy. He's offended by the obscene things that people in the office are saying, and he doesn't speak in riddles like everyone else in the office. And as we found out in this, I thought it was a really great scene that he was born in horror. And I don't know. He definitely is a strange guy, but I wonder if there's something about him that he is the one that's normal, and it's the rest of them that we're supposed to see, or that maybe there's something wrong with them.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I would agree with you to a certain extent, especially before this episode where he's like, he thinks everything, you know, the photos are grotesque and no one should be looking at him. But I, like Peggy, originally thought he was just making a joke about the whole Mars thing.
Of course, yeah.
But, like, right. It seemed like if he was making a joke, you know, he definitely wasn't making it seem like it was. And if he wasn't, then what does that say about, like, he either believes that or, you know, he's got some sort of psychological problem or he's just really bad at telling jokes. So I don't know how to read that because it seemed kind of... I mean, clearly, like, he's made up this whole alternate universe, if it's not a joke, you know, to cope with the fact that he was born in a concentration camp, and, you know,
yeah. Then
you're not supposed to be born, you know, in there. You know, they clearly didn't, you know, babies were not allowed or whatever.
Babies are not allowed.
Yes. But
you can't do that in there.
Exactly. But, yeah, no, so, I mean...
What did you guys think of the choice to kind of shoot him off the reflection of the window or whatever instead of shooting him head-on?
I really liked it. It was I think it added to the bizarreness of the scene, and that must have been really weird for Peggy, especially coming down from that high, to have that conversation with him like that.
Yeah, not only that, but it definitely kept him in that shroud of mystery, too. You know,
Yes. Whereas
we couldn't really see if he was joking or not until the very end. And it almost seemed like they kind of made a connection, almost. Like, I don't know if maybe Peggy just thought it was too weird, but, like, when he looks... Because, you know, they do a whole look right into the window thing, and, like...
Yeah.
It's clear that he's giving a telling look. I don't know if that was supposed to be, like, a connecting sort of look, or just like a haunted, he's like a haunted sort of look. So, but it's clear that it'll end up playing out a little bit more later. So we'll see what happens with our boy Ginsburg.
Absolutely, and also when I was watching that, I thought we had spoken a few weeks ago of we thought it was kind of strange that they chose to follow him home, and we were like, why are we watching this old man speak, you know, this Hebrew prayer to him? I think that we're seeing the importance of why they showed that to us now.
Yeah, I would agree, especially since, you know, they had the scene of his dad, or his adopted dad, I guess, coming into the office, so we didn't need a bunch of exposition for that. But yeah, I think definitely we're getting more significance on that. But yeah, so do we have any more about the Peggy segment before we move on?
No.
Nope.
Right. Drugs playing a big part.
Oh yeah.
In this episode, we get Roger. We get more Jane. Jane is, and Roger clearly hate each other. Roger's going to this dinner with psychiatric people, and at the dinner they even mentioned, it seemed like they were talking about exactly what Ginsberg was saying when he was from Mars. Like they were talking about some psychiatric pattern they had been seeing or something. We didn't get like the full gist of it. But
yeah, they were
like
talking about,
what were they saying?
They were talking about the subjective nature of what is truth. And if there can be such a thing as good or evil in the world, and that kind of stuff.
The one guy who was the observer was actually talking about, like, planets and stuff.
Yes. Yeah, it was more like, there's been a lot of, they're starting to talk about, like, otherworldly stuff.
Yeah.
This season.
But yeah, so in any case, we get the dinner, Roger wants to go, and then Jane's like, no, we're doing this together. And when you see that card, I mean, first when they say that they're going to trip LSD, yeah, you're like, uh-oh, this is about to pop off. But when you see the card that they have to fill out, that is just his name, where he lives, and that he's tripping balls.
Please help me.
Yes. Exactly. Please help me. You know something crazy is about to happen.
That was high comedy.
And I liked how they did it. Usually in, like, LSD tripping scenes, you see a bunch of, like, psychedelic colors,
yeah,
and like crazy, like distorted images and stuff,
and monsters.
Yeah, exactly. But they didn't do that here. They kept it about as based in the real world as they could. While he was still tripping, and I thought, I mean, the most hilarious part to me was where he first realizes he's tripping, and he opens the Stolichnaya, and that Russian anthem just blares out, and he puts the cap back on. And he realizes what's going on, he takes it back off, and he just starts chuckling.
That was great.
This is going to be awesome. And it just spiraled from there. What do you guys think? What was your favorite part of the whole tripping in the apartment scene?
I liked that, and then when he was looking at himself in the mirror after he had looked at that dual image picture, the old and young, and he was looking at the like right side of his face was young and he kind of looked like Don, and then Don's behind him.
Yeah. And yeah, and the two hairs, he had the jet black on the one side and the gray, the silver on the other.
Yeah, yeah, that was great.
That was cool as well. Joe, how about you?
Did you guys think that it was maybe a little bit too easy, kind of like Draper's fever dream, kind of, you know, illustrating what he's thinking and stuff like that?
I mean, they clearly do everything with a purpose on the show, so you kind of have to let it go. I think Draper's fever dream was much more heavy-handed in like what we were supposed to take out of it. And I mean, this one clearly had those elements as well, but I think there was enough, like, you know, funny/crazy stuff going on that I think it wasn't as overly intense, like, to get the message across.
I agree. I think it's intentional. It's definitely jarring to us because we're not used to it on the show, but I definitely feel like there's been a pattern of going deeper into the minds of the people that we're seeing, and they're starting to take us inside their imagination.
And then, of course, with the scene when they get back to their apartment where he's taking the bath and he's, like, watching the Black Sox replay the World Series in front of him. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that along with the Stolichnaya thing, I think helped balance out the fact that, you know, Roger was dealing, you know, we were supposed to find out, you know, figure out what Roger was dealing with and stuff like that. So I think that ended up helping out a lot. And then, of course, the whole discussion of basically them, or Roger at least, believing that they're getting divorced.
Both of them, definitely.
Yeah. And they reached the truth finally. And
it was just like really detached, robotic conversation, and it was nice, actually.
Yeah.
I thought
it was well done.
Yeah, I mean, it was real well done, and it actually seemed like, I mean, even though it was detached, it seemed like they almost cared. You could feel like they almost had more emotion in the detached scene than they ever did on screen with each other.
Absolutely.
So I thought that was really awesome. And then, of course, Jane. Before I get this, it was nice to see Jane looking really hot again.
Yeah,
right. It was.
Like, she didn't look good until she was in the robe and she woke up in the bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you were like, oh, I completely remember why Roger wanted her in the first place, because she looked amazing.
That's the whole scene. All I was thinking was like, well, you can't leave her now. Look at her on this
just
bed.
Pull the sheet back a little bit more, just a little bit more.
I know. It was a mate. Like, I mean,
they must have done some nipple removal or something.
Yeah, I mean, that was basically like that J-Lo dress from like 2002 or whatever. but yeah, no, Jane looked amazing. And it was nice to see Roger actually happy when he was telling her. And, you know, she was like, she was worried, but then she kind of realized that, you know, they were right and it's going to happen. So,
yeah, and Roger, she didn't remember at first.
I don't know if she didn't remember or she maybe just thought, she just kind of brushed it off as just like under the influence talk, you know, like.
She was completely shocked when she realized that he was leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm sure she remembered that they had had a deep conversation, but I don't think she didn't remember that she had confessed to him about the therapist and that she had already realized that it was over between them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she accepted it immediately once she remembered that, like, oh, yes, we did talk about this.
Yeah. So, but that was, and Roger was, like, actually happy. And even though she, like, tried to make him mad by saying, you know, this is going to cost a lot of money, he was like, that's fine. And he just seemed at peace with himself.
Right.
So it was nice to see Roger happy.
It was. He hasn't been happy in a while.
It's true. And then before we get, I mean, I'll mention this now. The very end of the episode, he comes in with Don. He's just like, it's gonna be a beautiful day, and that was just great. But yeah, and then we go to Don, and he takes Megan out yet again, goes on yet another trip. And this is the only part of the episode that didn't revolve around drugs. And it kind of was the only...
Orange sherbet is definitely a drug.
Yeah.
That orange sherbet looked like colored dookie.
It should be a controlled substance.
I didn't want any of that.
Yeah, that looked gross. But yeah, they actually... It was Megan actually addresses like some of her problems that's going on. Before, we didn't really get much... for Megan, but it was nice to see her talk about, like, you know, she clearly cares about working, you know, and it was nice to see her kind of like tell Don that, because he clearly doesn't care, because she's basically a trophy wife to him.
Yeah, and let's remember, Don, this is the first time, you know, his last wife didn't have a job. Her job was Don.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I think he was a little ignorant to the fact that she might actually care about being something other than Don's right hand.
Yeah, I mean, she's like an actual person, whereas Betty is just kind of, you know, there, you know, as almost like a wall covering or something, you know?
Yeah, you know, and even, not to get off the subject of this episode, but even when he was dating the Dr. Faye Miller last season, any time that she would put her work above their relationship or anything even close to it, he would get really pissed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he's just not used to a woman having needs other than him.
Mm-hmm. Excellent point, my friend. But yeah, so they pull up in the Howard Johnsons, and then Don freaks the fuck out. He drives off, and then he freaks out. And it's basically just him freaking out for the next 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Where did you think Megan had gone? If you had any theories.
Well, obviously they play it up like she's done.
Yeah, I mean, she got killed. Yeah, exactly. The fact that they were like, oh yeah, she went off with those two dudes.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, who the hell goes off with two random dudes at a Howard Johnson's in upstate New York?
Well, it's still the 60s.
Yeah.
Hitchhiking. Now, I have to tell you, because of, and I'll talk about this later as we get to it, that I have a lot of faith in Don and Megan's relationship. I, the whole time, was sitting there thinking, oh, she probably just went to go, you know, do something. I kept thinking that he would wake up and she'd be there with him again.
Yeah, I figured that she would have ended up just going to the room or going into town and getting a drink or something, but
yeah,
she left. She was gone. And Don was freaking out. I mean, clearly, you know, you kind of, I think his reaction was justified, especially since, you know, he had his own mishap with picking up hitchhikers.
Right.
In 3, I believe.
Oh, yeah, good point. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so he clearly, I think he, it was, it, you know, you kind of needed to remember that to realize, to figure out how he was reacting. But still, it showed, you know, it showed that he treats her more, or at least during this episode, he treated her more like an object than an actual person. But
he did.
I was relieved to see that he was working again at Howard Johnson's.
Yeah, he was working.
Like, when he turned that mat over, and, you know, he was basically bouncing ideas off of her, it was nice to see. This was, like, kind of the first time this season where you actually saw him caring about the work again.
That's true.
So it was nice to see that, like, that's why I don't think he's, old Don is dead.
Right.
Because they kind of, because it seemed like he was just using her as an idea bouncer, you know, bouncing ideas off of her. So it was like, he still cares about the work, at least somewhat.
Well, yeah, I agree. I don't know if, you know, I don't think that, you know, saying that if old Don is dead, that means he can't still be creative. I just think that the dark part of him is fading a little bit.
The debaucherous Don.
Yeah, the animal. He's not as alone as he used to like to think he was. And speaking of, you know, I'd say most of what happened between Don and Megan in this episode was Don's fault. But I actually thought it was pretty shitty of Megan. The moment that Don left, the thing that made him leave was her saying, "Why don't you call your mother?" That was bullshit.
Yeah, no, that was...
It's been set up that she knows a lot about his past, but does she know who his mother is?
She must know. And regardless of if she knows or not, she knows that she is the only thing that he has now. It's just Megan and whatever relationship he has with his kids. That was a shitty thing to say.
Yeah, no, she definitely cut straight to the core of him.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw, like, it really, like, took him off his feet, and he kind of had to get out of there.
Yeah, I mean, he drove away, but, like, they're at a hotel. They're going to be staying there anyway, like... I understand that driving away is not a good thing, but, like, it was clear that he definitely needed some space after that barb.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you blame Don, but, like, she definitely had a big thing to say about it, too, so.
You know, this might have just been another one of her power moves. Like, she made it seem like, oh, I thought that you just left me. I think that this was just another, you're never going to do this to me again move from Meg.
Or, like, yeah, or, like, maybe another power move where it was, like, you know, you need to realize how much you need me sort of thing.
Yeah, which he definitely did by the end. Yeah,
but I think it was nice to finally see their relationship kind of blow up. Because, I mean, it was kind of hinted at. And as most people know that listen to the podcast, I don't think it's going to end up well.
Yeah.
Especially since it's, I mean, it's still basically Don using her for his needs, even by the end. I don't know. I want to bring this up. Now that Debaucher's down is dead, do you think maybe his creativity might end up going out the window a little bit too? I mean, maybe in like a Tiger Woods sort of situation.
That's definitely what they set up. They
I
set
like
up that, that question at the end, because he definitely got a little kick to the nuts of you need to get back to work.
Right.
So I hope that the next episode is focused on him, and I think we're gonna find out if he still has his juice.
Yeah. If he can still hit some putts.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. So I mean, we'll see what happens. Like I said, I don't think old Don is dead. I think the thing, I mean, creativity just doesn't like leave you. You know, like if you're creative, you're always thinking of ideas for like marketing ideas and stuff. You're not gonna just, you can't just flip a switch and stop that.
That is true. I agree with that. But you know, I think that Don is also much like he's like House in a way that he uses his isolation and his misery as a tool to be good at his job. And he's been slacking now that he's happy. So the question is going to be, like it is with House a lot of times, can you be happy and still do the job? Can you relate and still do the job?
Yeah. We'll see what happens. Like I said, I don't think Megan and him end up well, so I suppose we'll see.
Well, definitely no. If things go shit with them, then he will definitely be back on his job.
Oh yeah, he'll definitely be on his grind.
We'll get some great pitches, some great seductions of women.
Oh yeah, old Don will be back in full force.
I don't think it's gonna happen, but I'd love to see it if it does.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't feel like. I mean, the relationship is still based on what Don needs. I mean, even at the end where she's like, I'm leaving or whatever, get off of me, and he's just like quivering, even though he's on his knees, he's accepting that he like needs her, but it's still about his needs, you know? It's
yeah, but she was in complete control.
Well, yeah, no, I'm saying, what about her needs? Is her only need to control Don? Because, we don't really see... I mean, we never really see Megan what she wants from Don.
Let's not downplay the monumentous task it would be to control Don Draper. We've never seen anyone do it, really. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if she is in control right now, it's not just, I'm in control of Don, it's... Don knows that he needs me, and now he knows to never fuck with my work again. Because I'll run off with young hippies. Mm-hmm. I now know his weak spot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I still feel like we haven't seen... I mean, besides getting Don to, like, realize that he needs her or whatever, and to come back, crawling back, basically. I still feel like we haven't seen Megan get what she's wanted from Don yet.
What do you think that she wants from him?
Yeah, what do you think she wants?
I don't know. I have no clue. Like, we don't know her that well. I mean, we only got introduced to her basically at the very end of last season, and then, you know, this season, the beginning of this season again. So I really don't know what she wants. Yeah. I mean...
Well, you know, we did know her, like, pretty much all of last season, but just in a very minor way that we weren't paying attention to because we had no idea that she was going to become what she was. But we met her, we've known her for a while.
Like, we never knew who she was, you know?
What I'm saying is that I think that I bet that if we went back and watched it, we would see that we got a lot more clues as to who she is than we thought because we didn't care as much because she wasn't supposed to be anything like she was. But either way, what I was going to say is, you know, hopefully they mentioned that her parents would be coming to town soon. Maybe we'll get to see more of who she is or what she wants if we get to meet her parents.
Mm-hmm. I feel like she might be a sort of Peggy Boyle in a way where she's a hotter, less talented version of Peggy. Maybe, because, I mean, she does seem to care about the work. You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's still very rare to have a woman in this type of environment. So, I don't know. We'll see.
I hope so. Maybe she can get Peggy some help, because Peggy's on her way down right now.
Yeah, Peggy, you definitely pointed out that she's developing a drinking problem.
Yeah.
That was something that I kind of... glossed over, so yeah, she's definitely having a tough time.
I think it's such a great dynamic to see right now on the show that Peter and Peggy are running towards Don. They both want to be him so badly, and Don is getting the Don beaten out of him right now, and I think he's like running away from who he was. Mm-hmm. So it's like this ghost that's not there anymore, and everybody's trying to be it or get away from it.
They kind of realize that they need it almost.
And yeah.
They're all trying to step in to fill the void, but you can't really fill the void of Don because he's just too Donny.
You can't. Only Tom Jane can fit those shoes.
Yeah. I don't think Tom Jane could do anything.
you know, he was supposed to have the role.
Thank God he didn't get it.
Only the shadow demon born of Melisandre can fill that gap quite the way the Don can.
Exactly. Bringing it back to the beginning. Before we end, I just want to say I am loving the Bert Cooper. Injections of Bert Cooper. He's always kind of there. He never really does anything, but he always has like these. He always kind of like sticks his nose in right when it needs to be in. You don't get too much of him.
Well, he's been kind of said to be a buffoon. Like so far, they're like, "Oh, Bert, we just had the meeting. We left Bert in the office. We had our meeting out here." Well, like, you know, Bert shows up late. Oh, we already had the meeting. Oh, Bert, he just walks around without his shoes on. And then even earlier in today's episode, they were like, "Oh, are you leaving too, Peggy? Oh, it's amazing any work gets done."
and he was in his socks.
Yeah, he doesn't wear any shoes. He does always wear his socks. But then he brought the wood at the end of the episode. So yeah, I also loved
in that last scene when Dawn gave Don that critique from Cooper, and she's like, "Oh, Cooper dropped this off," and Don was like, "Bert Cooper?" It's like that guy did something,
right?
Well, it's interesting because it's like he's a really interesting guy. Like, he's worldly and he like knows what he's talking about. Like, you know, he's actually high class, and everyone else is trying to strive to be high class, or at least they're like new high class. But he's like
he's independently
smart and academic, and you know, he hopped on the Mark Rothko train. You know, he's all into this Japanese stuff way before anyone else is.
That's true.
But they just kind of brush him under the carpet because they don't take him seriously because, you know, he doesn't wear the socks in the office, you know? But he always knows exactly what he's talking about when he says something.
He does, and Don totally tried to brush him off in that last scene when he was just like, "It's none of your business what I'm doing," and Bert was just like, "This is my business."
Yeah.
Well, I think that was that was a veiled threat, and... Yeah. That put Don in his place.
Exactly, yeah. But I mean, I'm loving Bert. I mean, they
Bert
put him in
awesome.
Just exactly when they need him, and it's just great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's going to do it for the podcast this week. You can always check us out on our Mad Men Game of Thrones grind every Tuesday on iTunes or on the website in-the-bag2gs.com. I hope everyone's enjoying the new layout. Hopefully we'll be able to get some more content going on this week. Last week was kind of light. But yeah, come by and visit us, and we'll check you guys out later.
Keep it real.
Put it in the bag.
Bagger pants.